Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in today. You know, I am a people person. I love people. I love being around them. And I've always been, I think, a bit of an empath. I never really knew what that was, but I just knew that I was super sensitive to people around me. I could feel their moods. I could feel their needs. And sometimes it can be exhausting, but it also is a wonderful passion of mine to work with people and to make people happy, I guess you could say. So when I met this person, she had a smile that could light up the world. I know that sounds really cheesy, but it is so true. And I met her through my dear friends, Kim and Keith Waller, who have been guests on my show. They're responsible for getting me to my very first mission trip in Haiti. And this is their daughter. And what I'd like to do is give you a quote I read of hers. And this is what inspires me to learn more about her and share her being with you, a Dream Big listeners. So it says, people who feel valued, loved, and inspired lead healthy lives that in turn allows them to move past their own lives and see how they fit in the bigger picture of mankind. Being healthy gives people more energy and focus to pour out into helping and caring for others. Everybody, I'd like to introduce you to Danielle Tijan. Am I saying it right? No, I said it wrong. Tell me how to say it again.
You're totally fine.
Okay. How do you say your last name?
It's all good. I say Tijan.
There you go. We even rehearsed it before and I screwed it up, but that's okay. I think it sounds better French. Tijan. There you
go. So I told my husband I love him a lot to take that name because I would have to explain it in every circumstance for the rest of my life.
Over and over again. Right. Yeah. And we are talking to you. Where are you living these days?
I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And how did you end up in Minneapolis, Minnesota from Michigan?
Yeah. I came out here originally. I had participated in a year-long commitment where you would travel the country doing music ministry. And they're located out here, and it was an organization called Youth Encounter. And so I'd come out here and done that, and I'd traveled in the north region part of the United States, and it was great. But actually it was, I came out here to study theater at Concordia St. Paul. But I had met my husband through doing music, and he is from Texas, so he had already moved up here to be in a band with friends of mine. And so then there were two really good reasons to be here.
I would say. So music, how is music in your life?
I don't know that anybody's asking that question in a really long time.
There you go.
I love music. I love all kinds of music. I think I equate music to different experiences in my life. And when I need to reach into a part of myself that I can't get to on my own, music helps me get there.
Okay.
And I think it brings joy, and I think it brings light, and I think it brings reflection, and it brings power. And so I think I wanted to travel is what brought me to the opportunity first. And that connection to music. And so I sang in the group, but I don't sing for anybody. My husband's actually the musician, but I'll sing all the time. But
now you have how many children?
Now, three children.
And, you know, I read in your bio that you really hadn't, you know, you weren't one of those people that was like, can't wait to be a mom. How did that change when you decided to have children?
I was 19 when I met my husband.
Yeah.
And I was the girl who was always sitting, wanting to sit at the grown-up table with my parents and all my aunts and uncles and watching them play poker and cards and, you know, sneak a sip of beer. And, you know, my sister is the one who is brilliant with children. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the one thing that drove me, I guess. But when I met my husband, I knew he was remarkable. And I knew that I couldn't let him go, but
that's
I feel lucky that he chose me just because he's, you know, he was the one who loved relationships and wanted that. And he got stuck with me. And
I don't think stuck is the right word.
Yeah,
no, dear.
I knew that I couldn't let him go. I couldn't pass up exploring who he was or what it looked like to be in a relationship with him. And he is still incredible and remarkable. And we had been married for a few years and we were like, okay, well, maybe let's think about it. And it made me nervous, children and or having my own.
Why is that, Why do you think it made you nervous?
Being a parent's overwhelming, really overwhelming. Like, I just thought, oh man, we're responsible for this life. And it's taken me on a journey of no other relationship, I guess I could say no other relationship has had me reflect and move through my own issues at such a rapid rate.
Good point.
Or come face to face with the things that I love and don't love about myself and how to reconcile those things and how to let go of control and how to reconcile who I am, my faith, who God is, like all these things, because I have these young people looking at me and asking questions. And for all intent and purposes, I know that I'm not perfect or close to it, and nor will our life be perfect. And so what is the end goal? To be in this beautiful relationship with these other humans that I believe the Creator has gifted us with being in this unique relationship with. It's not to control them. It's to see them, and it's to nurture what I see in them and continue to pray that I can see what God sees in them. And how do we draw that out, and how do we give them the tools to be loving and capable and see beauty and the Creator and participate in healthy conversation and communication and their responsibility to themselves and the people around them. I mean, that's huge.
It is so huge, but you know, I most people do not go that deep. And it's incredible because, you know, we live in this society. It's like, you know, you get married, you have kids, you do this, you do that. And it's like this A plus B equals C. And you were way deeper than that. And what I think, and here I am creating for you another job for you to do. There is something that you have on your website that I think every person who is thinking of having children needs to read. It should just be this little book that we hand them. You know, but it says
that you found on my blog.
Yes, it's on yours. And I'm going to read it to you. So it says, I'm trying to find it. Hello. Okay. So now that having three little ones, I have come to understand the greatest legacy I can leave here on earth is how I raise these children and love my husband. I have the opportunity to teach them about what it means to love and value the human race, to show them what God meant when he said, I have loved you so that you two can love one another. No matter what they do in life, as parents, we have the responsibility to pour our best into our children, to model struggles and forgiveness, grace and redemption, health and joy, with a whole lot of hugs and snuggles and laughs thrown in. That needs to be like in every parental book. And just actually just being a responsible human, I think it was just the words there are so powerful. You're an incredible writer. How long have you been having this passion with writing? And you have a blog, and I mean, and you're there's so many things you do in life, but writing, what does that do for you, and how did that begin in your life?
Well, first, thank you for that. I don't see myself as any kind of gifted writer, so it's still a little strange to me. And I feel humbled that anything I put on paper could connect with somebody or make them feel less alone or resonate. I mean, I love to read because I love to find the words that I can't find myself. And mm-hmm. so an opportunity to be able to do that with and for others is a gift. I've always loved books, and I would say writing for me felt like some lofty, unattainable thing. And I started journaling maybe right before children or after I had them, mm-hmm. because I'm already a pretty reflective person, and writing helped me do that. And then I read the book, The Artist's Way. Mm-hmm. Have you read that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think
so. That,
it's a great book.
Yeah. And so doing morning pages meant a lot to me because I carry so much in my mind and in my spirit all the time. Mm-hmm. And that really did help me process. And I remember when I wanted to homeschool our kids and I was wrestling with this concept, and I was wrestling with, for me, getting to the root cause of something is very important. Not that maybe even that I can get rid of it, but so that I can understand why I'm doing what I'm doing, or I say what I say, or I behave the way that I do. and so I started to write as reflections. And I learned a lot about myself because I try to be as honest as possible. Even if it's terrible, I'm going to write it down so that I can get the truth. And I love telling stories. I tell stories with my kids. I believe in stories and the way that they empower and inspire and transform how we engage with the experience of our life.
Good.
How we see truth, how we see light, how we see love, how we understand pain.
Do you encourage your children to journal at all? Have they started?
I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I started journaling, I think, when I was nine or 10. And I have them all. I saved them all. It drives my husband crazy because I have boxes and boxes of journals, and there is a bit of a paranoia that someday everyone's going to read them, you know, and it's like, well, hopefully I'll be gone by then. But there is so much, and, you know, I stress that with my Dream Big clients, that there is so much to learn about yourself in your journaling. Mm-hmm. Like you said, to really tap into the honesty. You know, we can write, I had a great day today. You know, anybody can do that. Mm-hmm. But to write about why it was great, to write about what your fears were that day, all those kind of things in journaling, and then going back and seeing what I like and what I don't like sometimes is when I go back and I see that I'm still struggling with some of the same fears, some of the same things that I haven't grown from.
My journal.
What's that?
Yeah, they're going to be like, this woman never got past like her issues.
Yeah.
I just keep writing about this thing.
I know. Well, actually, my husband was cleaning out his garage. Well, pretty much. Yeah. And he told me I had to go through this one box, and I found a journal that one of the entries frustrated me so much because I just said the exact same thing the other day. And mm-hmm. this journal entry was from 2004. And at that point, I'm mm-hmm. like, if you don't do something about this today, I'm going to be really mad at you. So I did. I changed my life because of that entry. And so I think that's why journaling is so important. Writing is so important. I want to talk also about...
It brings a self-awareness that gives you a deeper cultural awareness.
Yes.
Like who you are and mm-hmm. how you move in the world, and especially with the relationships of people that are close to you and the relationships of people that you don't know very well, but you're still in a relationship with,
you're
right?
Connected,
so
right?
And so this awareness is very important to me. And so, yes, I encourage my kids to journal, and I encourage them to write stories because mm-hmm. we have limited screen time in our house and they get bored real easy. And like, dream something on paper and write it down. But
oh, good for you. Limited screen time. I like that. That is brilliant.
The battle will fight forever.
Yeah. I don't envy you on that. Let's talk about, you know, you do talk about, you know, working with people that are close to you, but also people that aren't necessarily as close to you. Let's talk mm-hmm. about your community and what you do. Can you explain to our listeners what you're doing in your community? I mean, I see on Facebook all of these beautiful things you're trying to do, growing gardens, things like that. Can you get in more depth with that?
Sure. I am a community organizer, an outreach and communications associate for my neighborhood association. And I do community gardens. There was a tornado that came through our area about 8 years ago, seven, 8 years ago. And the lot right next to us was turned into a community garden 2 years later. So I helped steward that with other community members.
The community that you live in struggles. Mm-hmm. And is that
probably
correct to say that?
Disinvested and neglected and stereotyped and traumatized community in the city of Minneapolis. That is not to say that poverty and struggle and low-income housing efforts and violence doesn't happen everywhere. It does. That is not something unique to the city, that you see that in the city, in the suburbs, and in rural areas. So that is money and power and struggle is everywhere. It's easy to look at me on the outside and I'm exactly part of the problem, or what is reflected is the problem. People move into areas that from a shallow standpoint look like they need help. And so people like to come in and help without an understanding, the depth of understanding that's needed of what's really going on, and sometimes how help can perpetuate a problem. And so I would say listening has become my job, listening and understanding of what it means to live with privilege, my income, by my skin color, by having an income and a half in my household with two people in the same house raising kids. Like, that's a gift and makes life easier most of the time, right?
Right.
But understanding the history of how we got here helps me understand what's being played out in all of the nuance of the community in which I live now.
How do you feel this? I totally get what you're saying as far as, you know, I think first or second time, it was the first time I went to Haiti with your parents. And, you know, I know for myself, my heart just wanted to help. But I understand that in the same sense, if we're not listening, if we think we're just going to go in and make things all better for the week that we're there, instead of really listening to the needs. I remember one of the missionaries that went with us was a construction worker. And he was so frustrated with the way that the Haitians were putting the buildings together and the materials they were using. And I thought, here is a great example of when we go in and we want to help, but we're just doing our thing that we know from being in a privileged area of how to fix things. Let's do it. But then we leave. They don't have a Home Depot to go to. You know, they can't just run to a construction store and pick up the tools that they need. They use sticks. They use wires. They use, you know, plastic bottles, things like that to build their housing. So how long did it take you to recognize that? A lot of people won't recognize that. They don't understand it. They're like, I'm here to help. Why aren't they taking my help? You know, I mean, how long did that, you know, was it something you experienced because of it? Yeah. Or,
I would say I experienced it constantly, because yes, I totally get that, as I've also gone to Haiti with my parents and have felt those things. But I think America is, and our history, I grew up in an age of colorblindness where that was the way to deal with it, right? Like in the 80s and the 90s, like, color isn't a thing and we're all the same. And while ideally, like, I get that there was always a disconnect with me, because it also wipes away the beauty of the differences in us, right? And in the cultures that we bring. And I think sometimes colorblindness is was supposed to be a tool, but got turned into a weapon of erasing. And I think the one thing that makes living and existing in America is we have to kind of acknowledge and own that history of white America and Black America and immigration and all of these things. But there is a acute and potent history with white America and Black America mm-hmm. that is different and is lived different than Chinese people and Japanese people that come and live here, people from Mexico or people from Australia, right? Like those histories are different. And so for me, it has been a gift to be able to be in relationship with folks in my neighborhood that have been patient with me as I learn and I struggle. The anger and the frustration that isn't maybe personally directed at me, but at the history in which we both share. Right.
And how do you handle that in regard to not taking offense?
I can give you an example. So we had, we were having a kickoff, plant the garden event, and the community garden is right next to my house. And I invest a lot of time and even some tension in my marriage because I would be out there so much and, you know, my family would struggle because the garden was a lot of my time and effort, right? And so, but I love this garden. And as a family, we've come to just really love it and tend to it. And it's been a catalyst for change in our community because it is a place for people to gather together. So my heart, not only my time, my sweat and my blood, but my heart is in that garden. Mm-hmm. And I work really hard to make sure that the neighborhood is in that garden, right? So it's not just outside groups coming in to tend to it and answer questions, but that really this garden is for the community. We tend to it. It reflects who lives here. And so we had a lot of different folks come and be at this rebirth for the garden in the spring. And there was a gentleman, a Black gentleman who came and he was in the garden with us, and he just had a sharper edge to him, and he was frustrated and angry, and we were having a conversation, and he was so put off and angry that so many white people were in the garden in a predominantly Black neighborhood, and was trying really hard to reflect and catch up and not say something ridiculous or offensive, and it really rocked me pretty deeply because I didn't quite know how to engage. And he was coming. It felt very personal to me because I came to that space personally.
Right.
And I didn't know what to do with it. And I was shaken. And just me on the inside. And at the end of the event, my friend, Miss Taliba, had come back. And I went out to the garden and sat with her, an elder in the community. And we sat there for about an hour and a half, and she said, "Something is wrong with you." And I said, "Can I be honest and unfiltered as I try to wrestle through this?" And she said, "Absolutely." And so we talked for a very long time, and it was such a gift to be able to hear her perspective and her point of view, and for me to ask all sorts of questions. I will be honest with you, I laid in bed the whole next day. I read an entire book, all my head, something stepping on me. And I was I'm not ready to be in the world. It's okay. Because I was just trying to sort it out. I was trying to understand it. And where I was, where we are, what are the boundaries? What are the lines? Where it is now and where it's healing? And all of the big questions and all of the nuance to the details of our life were just running through me all at the same time. And what I realized that day was that this gentleman has every right and reason to be angry and upset. What I realized that day is I came with myself to that garden instead of recognizing that I also represent something.
Mm-hmm.
And we do, just by like moving through the world, we represent. As a believer, I am a believer. And so I know that I represent the Creator and His Son wherever I go. But I also understand that my presence as a white woman isn't always welcome. And that's not personal. That is a traumatic history that America has experienced and never reconciled with.
Right. And we don't know if we'll be able to. I mean, I think that people like you, people who embrace the challenge of it, but stay open to it, is the most important thing in the journey. And I hate to wrap it up, but we are out of time. But the message that's so important here is that you're putting yourself out there. We put ourselves out there. We put our hearts and souls and our love out there. And that is a beautiful thing. Eventually, we will continue to scrape away at the history and start creating a beautiful history of our own. And I will hope and pray that you continue to do it with your heart and your soul. And I know you will. I don't doubt it for a minute. So I want to thank you for being a guest on Dream Big. Can you tell people where they can find your website and information about what you do?
Sure. I am trying to get back better about writing on a more biweekly basis on my blog, which is DannyTejan.com. But I also write an inspirational, thought-provoking space called Gather House with a photographer friend of mine, where we try to create beauty with words and pictures, images. She's a photographer. And so you can find that at GatherHouse.com.
Wonderful.
It's also been published a couple different times.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today. And also,
thank
I'd like
you.
To thank the sponsor, Senior Home Healthcare, for all of your sleep needs. Get that healthy sleep that you need. Call Senior Home Healthcare. Thanks again, Danny. Have a wonderful week.